This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Well, I was told this would be the best dressed man in the ballpark last night, but there's no way of verifying that because he's on the phone with us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, stuck in some Seattle traffic. Our buddy Ryan Roland Smith is with us. How are you, man? Where are you? What's going on here?
I'm frustrated. I'm taking every side street. I'm supposed to be there in person with you guys, and Edgar's wearing a nice sharp suit, you know, wearing my Sunday's best, and here I am nearly ramming people up there behind you, as you can hear the car alarm going off. So, yeah, it's frustrating, but I'm getting there. It's crazy.
Well, Rhino, I thought you maybe were going to show up without a shirt and some cut-off jeans like your dad.
yeah, no? Well, hey, you guys are talking about Anthony Rendon in Oakland, and as soon as I saw that clip, I'm like, man, this is so typical, and I guarantee you there's more of these kind of these altercations, whatever you want to call them, but not obviously caught on video. But that was just a bad look, man, for a guy who's trying to come back. He's getting paid a ton of money, barely played. But that happens down in Oakland, Dave. You've experienced it too, but so yeah. Have I. But yeah. So has my dad also in the stands, that's for sure.
That was such a funny story you told about you being down in the bullpen when I was on with you and Brock. Good stuff, man. But hey, so I'll start off with this. You know, I was pretty amazed by what we heard from the guy from Driveline. This all started with you, though, Ryan. Last year, you were talking about Matt Brash and just the nastiness of, you know, his breaking ball and, you know, just the sweep that he gets. And we just could not believe what we saw last night. Who was the hitter? It was
Ramirez,
actually. But, yeah. I mean, that was ridiculous. How did that get you fired up? Like, have you seen anything that bad for a really good hitter to get kind of, as Aaron Goldsmith said, corkscrewed into the earth? That was pretty. That's pretty fascinating, man.
Yeah, and he's a tough guy, and just to his credit as well, he's not a guy who he takes some big swings. But he doesn't miss that badly, Jose Ramirez. He's been around for a long time. He's a tough hitter. To make him look like that on opening night, we talk about this all the time. Coming out of spring training, one thing you want to do as a pitcher is gauge reaction from hitters. So if I'm working on a new pitch, I can see all the pitch metrics all I want. I want to see how the hitter responds to it. And then you see that, and that's just on another level. We talked about this a lot last year. Obviously, when he was a starting pitcher at the beginning of the year, nasty stuff, couldn't command it. And then last night, and what we saw plenty of, when he's in that bullpen, he's not caught up with trying to be perfect in regards to command. He's just, here it is, hit it. And then if I get to two strikes, I'm going to throw the biggest breaking ball of my life here every single time, and that's the result. So I think for Matt Brash, there's been a little bit of talk about, maybe – is this guy, are we wasting the chance to have him as a starting pitcher? He is perfect right where he's at. He's hitting triple digits and just throwing balls out over the middle of the plate, getting the two strikes, and then you're going to see what you saw last night.
Hey, Ryan, you and I were talking in the press box last night about Luis Castillo, and I was just talking to you about guys that are, you know, develop a reputation of being slow starters and, you know, what leads to that, whether it's a mental, physical thing. How refreshing was it, or surprising even, that he looked the way he did last night, even with the ball coming back, almost hitting him in the head? You know, he retires 12 after that, doesn't give up a walk, not a run. I mean, he was outstanding last night, which goes against that reputation of slow starter.
Yeah, and you know, spring training, look, and I've heard this before, but it doesn't really matter. I hate hearing this, but, you know, he was, you know, 91s, 93s. And again, I know it's not all about velocity, but it tells you, it speaks volumes. When you see a guy who's in spring training, 91, 93, sometimes, and it's not the case with Luis Castillo, as we saw last night, he was 95s, 97s. But sometimes guys do that because there's a complacency situation. Yeah, Bob, you and I were talking last night about some guys come in and they're just not ready to go April 1st. And man, I don't care how good you are. If you go in that first 2 weeks of the season and you keep looking over your shoulder because your velocity is not quite there or something's wrong timing, mechanical-wise, it just puts more pressure on you to do more. And what happens is you start coming outside your mechanics a little bit. It turns into injuries. You become injury-prone or you start missing pitches. But then when you see Luis Castillo last night, I think, you know, first, second pitch I saw with movement, you know, when I saw that 9-5, I was like, oh, we're good. We're good here. And then he just settled in, man. And I've got to say, when he throws that fastball middle and up in the strike zone, you can talk about his changeup, breaking ball all you want. But that fastball, man, he was 40% swing and misses. That is insane on that fastball, especially when it's up in the strike zone. When he has that pitch, you know, cooking early in the game, he is so tough. And you know, like we talked about, refreshing to see 95s, 97s. You're going to see triple digits at some point, May, July, whatever. But it was just good to see him because you want him to kick off April on the good foot, that's for sure.
Hey, Ryan, based on what you saw out of Robbie Ray, because in spring, it was pretty amazing to hear of a guy who, you know, just a couple of years ago was a Cy Young winner, and they're talking about how dynamic he is and what a great spring that he's had. What did you see from Robbie Ray? Was there anything significantly different?
Yeah, I always base this off, you know, what we saw in 2022. I mean, again, we all knew who Robbie Ray was coming off the Cy Young Award. But if you remember, I mean, I joined you guys at 3 o'clock on a Monday, and there was constantly this, like, trying to justify why he's, you know, 91s, 93s, talking about velocity, or justifying why he's having that big inning, or justifying, and I'm talking the first half of the season, because he got on a roll. Matter of fact, when he was facing this Cleveland team, when we're talking in August, he was on a really good roll around that time where he just looked better than a Cy Young Award winner. But it took a little bit to get to that point. That first half of the year was like, you want to talk about a slow start. He was just trying to find it to the point where Scott Service said, listen, you got to come up with another option. You know, we saw that two-seamer. He was messing around with a changeup. But I got to say, going back to 2021, he wins a Cy Young Award on two pitches. One of the reasons why he could get away with the two pitches is because his fastball was just alive. It had that finish. So when you talk about what we saw in spring training this year, plenty of what we saw every Cy Young Award winning season. And I think another guy like Robbie Ray, as good as he is, there is that psychological roller coaster that he goes on. When you're talking about that big inning, or you're talking about some of the performances his time with Arizona, for example, before the Blue Jays. If just like Luis Castillo, you can roll into April, and you sit 95. That gives you that extra confidence to go, you know what, I'm just going to throw this pitch down in the middle, I'm good, and then you can get to that slider, and everything goes from there. So, great sign, and I love this. This goes for the whole rotation. There's no complacency whatsoever. And Robbie Ray obviously went off, had a massive off season. He's throwing way harder than what he ever has in spring training. So whatever it did, it worked. Not to mention, too, we're going to get a look tonight, the first time, really. We're going to get a look at, he's throwing a split, which I think is a great addition. We will see more of it. We didn't see a whole lot in spring training, but I'm curious what that does, especially left on right, too. So it's going to be fun to watch tonight. I'm looking forward to it.
Hey, Ryan, when you're a pitcher and the guy in front of you does what Luis did last night, and say you're Robbie Ray, or if Robbie Ray does it and then you're Logan Gilbert, how much does that kind of get your competitive juices going to be the, hey, I'm not going to be the guy that puts the dud up. I want to keep this going. Does that, you think that has any impact on the guy that's pitching the next night?
Well, yeah, put it this way. Somehow, I remember when I first got my first run of being a starting pitcher in the major leagues, I'll tell you a quick story. Somehow I got slotted in behind Felix Hernandez, if you remember who that is. And so he would go out there and just do his thing. And I'm like looking around, shrugging my shoulders, yeah, in my head thinking, yeah, you got me tomorrow night, fellas. Is that right? Because, man, I'm like, there's no way I can match, you know, the 10 plus punch outs and the, you know, 7 shutout inning. But I will say this, man, it's nice when you watch that, your team comes in after a game, offensive players feed off the energy and the tone set by that starting pitcher. I'm not just talking about results or performance. I'm talking about that presence, man. Like Luis Castillo, you know, when he does that little flex at the end of the punch outs, you just feel like, you know, you guys own the place. And from a starting pitcher standpoint, if you're Robbie Ray and you're watching that and you're hearing the crowd getting fired up, the adrenaline starts to get going like the sixth inning the night before. So it does get you fired up. On the flip side, if you're behind someone who's really scuffling and they're just trying to figure it out and they're just battling through starts, you're like, oh, man, here we go. I need to pick up the pieces here. The bullpen's worn out. I'm going to save some arms. I'm going to get through five innings. So with all that being said, man, I guarantee Robbie Ray, we talk about that velocity, that whatever offseason he had, and what we're going to see tonight, it helps massively when you're pitching against behind a guy like Luis Castillo. Not to mention, too, man, all these guys, they're so competitive. It's not this situation where it's like, oh, yay, you know, great work, Luis Castillo. I'm so happy I'm on his team. Yeah, they think that, but at the same time, as you guys know, you both do, you know, Davey, I mean, you like this in the NFL, and obviously, you know, Bob, you know, stranger to this either. You're looking around going, I want to be better than that guy. That's just human nature. That's that feeling you get. And so I guarantee you there's plenty of that. So I'm really excited, Robbie Ray, what we're going to see this season, especially pitching behind a guy like Luis Castillo.
And you guys were sitting together here at the ballpark last night?
Is that right?
In the press box, yeah.
He was sitting in front of me. I didn't even, in the beginning, I was so dialed into what was happening on the field. I didn't even see him. And he turned his head around and started asking dumb questions. I was like, listen, man, I'm gonna do TV tonight.
He was ignoring us. Him and Brad Adam were just big time in us.
It was just a dose
of reality. Yeah. Really, like, oh, I get it. I see. When nobody's looking, he likes us. When there are people around, he doesn't really know us. I see.
Mike Lefko was sitting down there trying to talk to me about pickleball. I was like, dude, I've got a big job tonight, man. My face is on TV. I'm wearing this suit. Leave me alone. That's how it was.
I'm wearing this suit.
Yeah, don't you see? I'm in a suit, man. Don't talk to me.
I'm not to be spoken to when wearing this suit.
Yeah. Well, Ryan, what about the crowd? And we were talking about, you know, how much they've affected, the pitchers, seemingly, anyway. Have you ever been in a situation like that? And, you know, how does that play if you're a pitcher on the mound and, you know, you're trying, especially with the pitch calm thing and all the noise and everything? That was something else.
It was awesome. And we've seen for the first time, you know, the pitch clock getting counted down on Karen Shack, our buddy who was just absolutely rattled. I do remember there was one instance. I can't remember where I was on the road. Just some absolute just hostile, just a bunch of Muppets out in the stadium. I can't remember what city it was. Or maybe I do. I just don't want to throw them under the bus. I remember I picked off three times, which you can't do anymore, and they start booing, and then I stepped off again, and then the boos got louder, and then I balked. I can't remember where that was, and they just ate it up, man. I was so rattled. I couldn't even remember the next five pitches because I was so rattled, and you could see that last night. The crowd was so into it. J.P. Crawford even said this after the game. He said, listen, in that inning where Ty France hit that home run, the crowd was a major factor. It really was. And you could feel that energy. I mean, I think people are still just reaming after, you know, what we saw in that playoff game. So it was a special place last night and obviously a big weekend, series. And there's all this new stuff around the ballpark. It's just a good place to be right now for sure.
As far as what we heard and we saw the impact it had, as you just brought up, you think this becomes more of a normal thing like this? We've talked about it. John Stanton popped by a bit ago, and Dave and I were talking about, you know, how much pride Seahawk fans take in the noise they create and how they can, you know, lead to false starts. And you feel like they've got a direct impact on the game. You're having a negative impact on the opponent. Do you see that happening here now that they saw it? Hey, what we did worked. What we did had an impact, and, you know, they're going to watch that pitch clock, whether they count down or whether, you know, whatever it is that they do. Do you see that becoming more of a thing out here?
I really hope so. I really do. I hope something like this catches on where everyone's like, you know what? When J.P. Crawford makes that comment and then, you know, a couple writers write about that and then it's tweeted out or goes viral and all of a sudden – you get these dudes who, you know, have a couple beers and they're with six of their mates and they go to the game and they're like, hey, let's kick this off again. Because I was watching last night right over the third base dugout, there was, you know, a group of guys who were kicking off the clock. You know, the clock countdown. And I was like, oh, man, hopefully this catches on. Hopefully, like, the whole section gets dialed in. So if there's enough of that, if there's enough comments from these players saying, not you know, begging for the crowd to be a factor, or please come and please do this. But if you get more of those comments like JP saying, man, the crowd just was a game changer in the seventh inning or whatever, I think this is something that hopefully catches on. And you get away from those, you know, those Tuesday, you know, half-filled crowds where you got to hear everybody clap your hands and everyone has to, you know, follow the scoreboard. It's told them to clap their hands. I hope it turns into that, because there's some places, especially on the East Coast. Baseball, obviously, as you know, on the East Coast, it gets pretty crazy that, yeah, the school board doesn't need to say, hey, everybody clap your hands. You know what I mean? They know when to get loud. So I hope it turns into that kind of building. And you know what? They have a good team this year. Hopefully that can happen for sure.
Hey, Ryan, not a ton of offense, but one guy that got a hit, I thought, Kelnick, how important do you think that was for him? I feel like this guy just needs to have some sustained success, and for him to be one of the guys at least that got a hit, a little bit more important than other guys like, you know, Ty France and Cal Raleigh.
Yeah. Yeah, I 100% agree. You make a great point. And look, we get so bogged down now in hard hit rate, exit velocity, quality of contact, all these metrics that, look, you know, for Jared Kelnick in spring training, there's still a little bit of processing going on. I've told you guys this when I get a chance to join you guys on the show or you know, in person, that Jared Kelnick's that kid, man, that I kind of hope he falls into this where he's just having a good time and he's just being a bro and he's heading out there and just having fun being a pro athlete, right? And so I think that when you sneak a couple balls through the infield because there's no shift or whatever, hopefully that first base up for a single, I hope that he's thought after that is not, oh, I didn't hit that very hard, but, you know, it doesn't really count. I hope he's like, yeah, here we go. Now I'm starting to make things happen. Now I'm starting to create some action. Now I can swipe a bag. If he has that kind of mindset, and especially too, listen, I don't care what you say, man. I get it. Batting average is not as important as on base and all these other metrics, but when you glance up, when you're hitting, and you glance up and you see a 180 next to the batting average in about 6 weeks, it just lowers that confidence level, regardless of how you feel about it. So if you can get even, I don't care if it's soft contact in this first 3 weeks, if he can hover around the 260, a bunch of singles, I don't care, because you're like, you know what, I'm contributing somehow, and it's just that foundation of confidence, and he's going to go from there. Because, man, he could be so good. We all know that. He just needs a little bit of that. When he goes up to hit, you know what, I'm a big factor in this lineup. I'm going to go and do my thing.
Ryan, we're trying to start a movement here. The Seahawks have the 12s. Do we call Mariner fans the 10s?
I don't mind it. I mean, I would like to, you know, maybe cut the cord from the Seahawks, like, you know, because I feel like it's leaning too heavily on the Seahawks. You know, they came up with that call. And as I'm saying this, I'm trying to stall because I'm trying to come up with some catchy thing that hopefully catches on and I can claim it.
Mariner Maniacs or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not that creative, so I've got nothing for you guys. But, here's the thing. You can't force it, though, man. You cannot force one of these, like, if it's something that's I hate using this word, but organic, oh, man, I can't believe I just said that, and it comes up, and all of a sudden,
it might be too on the nose. I mean, they said they've got the 12th man there. It's obviously the 10th man here. It is a play on what the Seahawks do, so it might be too on the nose. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if it catches on. I appreciate the honesty. That's honest feedback. You didn't jump on and say, hey, you know, you could have done what you did last night in the press box and just ignored me and pretended that you didn't know me and said, boy, I heard a stupid idea. But you told me. You said it to me, and I've got respect for that.
I'm basically trying to get the texters who are texting in with some mean text, if you guys haven't done it yet later on, to rip you a new one for that one. That's what I'm trying to do, because it's not bad. The tenth man's not bad, actually.
Ryan, we appreciate it. Drive safe, and we'll see you soon.
Sounds good, fellas. Thanks.
Thanks, Ryan.
There you go. Ryan Roland Smith in traffic out there, hopefully finding his way to the ballpark safely. Meanwhile, if you missed any of that conversation, you tuned in the middle of it, it will be available on the podcast page for you after the show at seattlesports.com. All right, coming up, we'll take a look at some of the more notable stories happening around the NFL. That's coming up next as we continue live from Edgar's Cantina. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Our thanks to Ryan Roland Smith, who joined us in the previous segment, in case you missed that conversation. Coming up a little bit later in the 5 o'clock hour, Logan Gilbert scheduled to be with us. So stay tuned for that. We are live at Edgar's Cantina, as we are every Friday, every Mariners home game. We're out here, so come out, say hello. And again, if you are coming out to the game tonight, have not left yet, bundle up. It is a bit frosty out, a little chilly. Toes getting cold out here, Dave.
All right. I deserve to be criticized for that one.
Jeez.
No, it really is, because, I mean, I run pretty hot,
yeah.
And I'm pretty cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. So make sure that you bundle up.
Yeah, a little public service announcement, but yeah. It should be good. There'll be a lot of body heat. I think there'll be a lot of bodies in the building here, and hopefully the Mariners will string together a couple wins. Meanwhile, looking at the world of the NFL, saw some more particulars on Bobby Wagner's deal. Our buddy Brady Henderson of ESPN.com tweeted out some details saying via source base value of the deal, it's 5.5 with a $4.48 million dollars fully guaranteed and another 1.5 available in incentives. Signing bonuses, $1.25 million, base salary, $3.23 million fully guaranteed. So he's going through all of this, and he said an important distinction in this is between the per game bonuses tied to the 53-man roster, so versus the 46-man game day roster. So technically, if he were to miss a game being on the 46-man, he wouldn't get that bonus. Mm. But since it's tied to being on the 53-man roster, he gets the bonus, which is $60,000 per game.
Well, I'm curious. The one thing about Bobby, he seems insistent on being on the field 100% of the time. That's going to be part of it. It doesn't look like it, I mean, first of all. But I wonder if that's going to be part of the arrangement of having him here. And again, just to kind of recap with Bobby, I said he's not as physical. They haven't used him that way. Like, he hasn't been a downhill, take-on blocker type of linebacker for a few years. But he is really good at blitzing, and he's got great ball skills and things like that. So how they use him, I think, will be really interesting. And also, how often? I mean, is he coming off the field, or is he going to maybe be an every-down guy? One other thing I speculated on earlier in the week is that maybe having him around allows you in some way, don't ask me this particulars, but it allows you to draft Jalen Carter, because you have such a great leader and a guy that, you know, everybody would respond to. This is how to be a pro.
Right.
I mean, that would be the one guy on the team right now. If you said, maybe it'd be Tyler Lockett, I don't know, but if you said, this is an example of a football player, this is the guy that you most want to emulate, you'd probably say Bobby.
Yeah. And I'm curious, because he was not a vocal guy when he was here. He was never known as, you know, line everybody up and let's, you know, I'm going to give you this big impassioned speech. And before we get out there, he was kind of a lead by example guy, like Cam Chancellor, same thing.
Yeah.
Is he a guy that you'd ever heard of in the past, just sort of taking the young guy under his wing? Not so much, hey, a troubled guy, but just, hey, young guy, here's how we do things around here. Or was he more just a young guy would just watch him and go, okay, that's how he comports himself, so I'm going to do that?
Yeah, I think more the latter, that, you know, he's an example. I mean, him and KJ, the stories of those two guys going in and watching film, like extra, that's, you know, after hearing all that and then hearing the nonsense that, you know, with Kyler Murray, that he has to have it written into his contract, that he has to spend extra time. I mean, those guys were just, you know, Cam Chancellor was the same way, and, you know, Richard Sherman, so just a total student, you know, and I'm sure that very quietly Bobby puts his arm around some of the younger guys, and you need to be looking at film. You need to be, you know, going home. Because that was just part of the deal. I remember back in the day, it was VHS tapes.
Yeah.
I still have some of those, Bob. I just don't have a player that works or can connect to a TV. But yeah, I mean, you would take that home every night and watch and see if you could pick up on things, little tells that other players have and things like that. That's just part of it. And that, from what I understand, like some of the sessions that those guys had were pretty, you know, pretty significant. Like that's how you prepare.
That seemed to be the theme through the building. I mean, whether you like Russ or hate him now, whatever your feeling is, that guy worked his tail off.
And Russell?
He was a guy who was watching the film. He was a guy who was putting in the extra work. So it seemed like that was just kind of the theme of the team. And I don't know if that came from the players or Pete or maybe Bobby and Russ took that on from Pete and led by example. But, you know, that would be – obviously that would be huge if they're taking a guy that potentially, you know, comes in with some – I don't know, what do you want to say, character risks? I don't know. If there's some red flag, obviously not everything is rosy behind the scenes with Jalen Carter, and if they're looking at that as, all right, this is a perfect person to be around.
Yeah.
If we feel like this is, hey, he's not a bad guy, his decision-making is questionable, but he's not a bad person, and we think he's got a bright future if surrounded by the right elements, then that makes perfect sense.
Well, and the other thing, too, I don't want to sell Pete Carroll short, because look, he's the leader of the team. Pete, you know, that he has his stamp on everything, and you know, it's mostly about, hey, this is how to be, and then let my leaders lead. But it all comes from Pete. I mean, it's not like Pete can't handle that, so he has to have Bobby Wagner come in. I just think it's just another element that it's one thing to hear it from a coach, which you totally respect, but it's also something to hear from, you know, your teammates. Like, I just remember a few times getting, you know, in my life, hear it from mom and dad, and then big brother comes and says, you got to straighten it up. You tend to listen in a different way, you know, just a different kind of leadership. So
somebody who's a peer as opposed to your boss or your parents. One other story that was out there, I saw this, I thought this was kind of funny. Asante Samuel, you remember him. Mm-hmm. There's rumors that the Patriots could be looking at Lamar Jackson, or he's got an interest or whatever. How serious any of that is, I have no idea. But he took to Twitter and tweeted out, Lamar Jackson, my brother, trust me, you don't want to play for Belichick.
There was no nuance there. Very straightforward.
Yeah, there was no, it wasn't cryptic. It wasn't, there was no gray area. There was no parsing. What do you think he means? I think he made it pretty clear. Now, he didn't specify why. Obviously, it wasn't a positive, glowing review of, hey, that's a guy you want to play for. And I saw another story, I think, who is it? Matthew Judon who plays there and said something about, like, some response, I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was something along the lines of, keep quiet, it's different here, or something like that. Sort of barking back at him. But kind of interesting, because we always hear about how, you know, people run through a wall for Belichick, and they love playing there, and he's got a reputation in the media and with the fans, but, you know, behind the scenes, the players love him. We've heard a couple people, whether it was Cassius Marsh or some others that have come out of there and haven't had some glowing reviews of him, and Asante seems to be one of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, and surprisingly, sometimes, like, you know, remember when Cam Newton was there? He liked him, right? Yeah.
Who was it, Bruce, that was yelling at him, saying, you don't like it there?
Yeah,
yes, I do.
Yes, I love my guys. That made me like Cam Newton, by the way. But yeah, I mean, it's just a different kind of deal. So, I mean, for the most part, you hear from, like, Teddy Bruschi and Tom Brady. I mean, they know what the deal is. He's not a warm, fuzzy – he's not going to be Pete Carroll or anything, but they like him in other ways, and probably part of that. I think it's – especially for the veterans. You know, when you're a veteran, you just want to hear the truth. Just tell me, man. You don't need to motivate me. You don't need to do anything. I just want to know. I had a coach in Denver that by the time I was in my seventh, eighth year – we'd be watching film. If I made a mistake, he would say, coach me up, Dave. And I'd tell him exactly what I did wrong. You know, that's the kind of relationship that you want as a veteran. So, but obviously, Bill Belichick, I mean, what we see is the way he comports himself with the media, which I believe is very immature.
Yeah, he's a little petulant, it seems like. He's
and that's just part of the deal. But he's obviously, his record speaks for itself.
All right, coming up, from a crazy catch to a great strikeout, we'll hear all of it when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob, live from Edgar's Cantina. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the Dial, every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Well, the Mariners were having some fun last night, and that translated over to post-game when Luis Castillo was having his press conference. It was a familiar face. Ty France snuck in and decided to ask Luis Castillo a question in the post-game presser.
Luis on the end over here. Ty France, Seattle Mariners. Is it hard being that handsome?
¿Es tan difícil ser tan guapo?
Lo que recuerdo es que cuando estaba en la reunión en el Montículo, él me dice, ¿tú recuerdas que Ty France, no, el catcher, Carl Riley, es bastante feo, ¿no, verdad? Sí, yo lo sé.
He's like, what I remember is we were having our little meeting in the mound, and he told me, like, do you know Cal Raleigh? It's a little ugly, right? And he's like, yeah, I know.
I saw this video. It was hilarious. Ty's in there in a cutoff t-shirt and his hat on backwards, like kneeling down in the back of the microphone with the media. But I didn't really quite get the reference. So why did they throw Cal in there?
Why, they called him ugly?
Yeah, I guess they said it on the mound, but it seemed to, the response, I was going, wait a minute, what did that have to do with him being handsome?
You know who's not going to like that? Mother of Big Dumper.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Baby boy.
Calling her son out. But yeah. It was funny to see Luis up there laughing the way that he did once he understood what he said. And him, he was up there trying to answer, and he kept laughing and just speaks to that rapport we saw out there.
Doesn't it just kind of warms your heart a little bit, doesn't
it?
I mean, you know that these guys are all great players, but they get along. They give each other a hard time. This is going to be so much fun following this game this year.
Sweeping the Dial.
Well, we talked about that Shohei Ohtani performance and the fact that he struck out 10, didn't allow a run, but they still lost. They also got a brilliant catch out in the outfield. Hunter Renfroe maybe misplayed the ball, but it led to this situation.
High fly ball to right from Peterson. Hit well. Renfroe got turned around and somehow still made the catch. What was that? Hunter Renfroe, kind of a no-look catch.
He went over to Kevin Mitchell, but this time he used a glove instead of the bare head. And he still smiled, and so was Shohei.
Did you see that highlight?
I couldn't believe it. I mean...
That's luck. I'm sorry, man.
He
got in the right spot, but he had his back turned to the ball. He didn't see it. He just threw his arm up there, and he played. You don't practice that. You don't see that. I've seen Ichiro make ridiculous over-the-shoulder catches in batting practice and things like that.
Yeah.
But just taking your eye off a line drive that you're in full sprint for.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about it, too, was if you look at his glove, it wasn't wide open. It wasn't a wide open glove. It was like open maybe 4 or 5 inches.
Yeah.
And he just stabs it. But the best thing was Shohei Ohtani's he just like froze and was like, has his mouth open, looking out into the right field.
If you guys have not seen this, go check out the highlight. It is amazing. It is amazing. But I can't give him full credit. Like, oh, he tried to do that. No, he did. I think he was throwing the glove up thinking it was going to go over his head, and he got beat. And it just worked out perfectly. What do you say?
I feel like the Shohei Ohtani, that little clip is going to become like a meme.
Yeah,
that people use to like
express amazement
or whatever.
Yeah.
Or a meme.
Yeah.
Sweeping the Dial.
Well, Matt Brash's strikeout of Jose Ramirez, he made him look silly. There's no other way to say it. He did make him look silly. Ramirez fell over. Scott Servais was a little bit more diplomatic when he was asked about it after the game.
Well, Jose's one of the best hitters in the league, and he has been for quite some time. And we all know how nasty Matt Brash can be, you know, with those breaking balls. And not just his breaking ball, but his fastball had great life. He threw for strikes, so they have to respect that and then swing at some breaking balls. But Matt's got great stuff. Nice to see him get off to a good start tonight. We're going to lean on him heavily this year, as we did at the end of last year. He's going to pitch in those big moments against the heart of the lineup. He's going to face the Jose Ramirez's and guys like that. And as long as he stays in that attack mode, good things will happen. And he went right after him tonight.
The Ramirez's, he corkscrewed him into the earth, Dave, down to its core. Broken ankle, maybe two. That's he said he handled that the right way. He couldn't get up there and laugh and say, that was hilarious. He's not going to give them any ammunition in the other dugout. But I'm sure behind the scenes, he had to be going, Did you see that? That was hilarious. And the funny thing is, Brash didn't even see it until he got back in the dugout. Because if you watch the replay, he fires it and he just kind of follows through on his motion and spins around. Turns the other, so he didn't know. He didn't know he screwed himself into the earth. He didn't see the corkscrew until he got back into the clubhouse.
I think he went a little bit extreme with the core. Could have gone mantle or crust, maybe.
Remember the Earth's crust?
Well, like when you were in third grade, yeah. You had learned the core, the mantle, and the crust.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was all I needed to see. Like, all of the things that we heard about Brash and how it's just... And again, you know, we talked to our buddy Ryan Roland-Smith. He was talking about it last year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what we heard from the guy at Driveline, now you see, and again, it looks like... That thing goes 9/10 of the way right down the middle, and then at the very end just turns hard left. It is, how do you do that? How do you execute that pitch?
Wouldn't that be amazing to stand in the box just to look at it, just to see what it looks like from a hitter's point of view? Yeah. Not that I have a chance of even offering at it, but just to stand there and go, okay, let me see what they're seeing. Because on TV, it looks like one thing. Everything looks easier or obvious on TV.
Yeah.
But when you're in the box, I would love just to be able to stand there and track it and go, oh, my.
Yeah, I mean, again, Jose Ramirez is a really good player.
He's one of the great hitters in the game.
And that was incredible, and he made him look foolish.
He made him look foolish, and Scott took the high road there, more importantly.
Yeah, well,
he
did.
Savvy manager.
Very good move. He's like, oh, he's a great – that was the first thing out of his mouth. He didn't want to – poke the bear there too much because you got another couple games left here. So,
well, yeah, you got three games left in this, and then you're playing them next week in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And this is a team that won 92 games last year and won their division by 11 games. So, you know, this is not you beating up on – you know, the sisters of the poor, or whatever you want to say out there. This is a very good team, and
maybe Service should have got up and said, "In your face!"
Should he have come running out of the dugout and pointed at him?
Yeah.
that would have been poorly received. I'm pretty certain of that. All right, the promise of a special season was only strengthened by Luis Castillo last night. We'll talk about that. Plus, Logan Gilbert will join us here live on the set. We are at Edgar's Cantina here at T-Mobile Park, as we are every Friday home game with Wyman and Bob. So all that coming your way next. Also, Mean Text. You still have time for that. 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. We'll do that at 545 as well. So a lot coming your way with Wyman and Bob. Seattle Sports on 710.